Hello, everybody. J.J. Cooper, Ben Badler here, Baseball America Draft Podcast. And today, we got a treat for you guys because we're going to talk all about the 27 and 28 high school classes. Ben, the 27 class for Ben is kind of like, it's not old news, but it's like something that he's been seeing for quite a while now. 28s as well, we can look ahead. But I think that you're really going to enjoy kind of getting a big picture look at kind of how this, especially we'll talk, you know, again, about how both classes shape up. Ben, great to see you. Welcome back from, this is kind of what you do during the summer is it feels like I'm always trying to keep track of where you are. But how was underclass area code?
Sometimes I wake up and I'm trying to remember where I am too. So, but yeah, area code underclass, it's my favorite event of the year. There's a lot of good events throughout the summer and throughout the fall, but the area code games, they have an underclass and an upperclass event going on. We got a couple guys out there right now for the upperclass, but you're bringing in a lot of the top players from all over the country and Canada, Puerto Rico as well to play for, you know, workouts and then games. So you're getting a lot of at bats from all of these guys facing good competition, and it's all on one field too. So you're not bouncing around and trying to keep track of three or four games or eight games at once or something like that too, which is always a plus.
The ADHD part of my brain when that's happening is like, I always have this fear. Like I realize that I just got to do a better job of just staying put at one place, because I always have the fear that I'm missing something more important at a different field. And I just have to block that out when that happens. Because you can't see everything then. You just can't.
When it's the yeah. field. Yeah, that's definitely, you get that FOMO sometimes when that's going on. I want to make sure you're at the right place. But when there's, you know, one of those quad games going on and there's three really good arms thrown at once on different fields, makes it a little more challenging.
So I wanted to start, before we kind of dive into the classes, kind of like the challenge of what you do and kind of the fun part in some ways of what you do as well, which is I do think that you're kind of you're uniquely qualified to do this from a standpoint of like you kind of drive our international, you know, signing day coverage, and you're doing the underclass, you know, kind of list for us on the domestic side. And to me, the fascinating and challenging part of that is that when you're talking about a college draftee, you are talking about someone we've got a long history with, but you kind of, there's still development to go there, but they're not going to change dramatically generally from one year to the next. I kind of want just to ask you, like, when you're seeing these guys, right? Like, because you may see some guy, you know, one summer and then you turn around to the next summer and you're seeing him again. I have to imagine that sometimes it's almost like, wait, is that the same guy that I saw last year? How do you kind of try to blend what you're seeing now versus kind of what you're kind of projecting ahead? And as you talk to people, kind of looking ahead far, far, far in the future in a lot of ways.
There are times where I'm literally saying that I don't think that's the same guy. I mean, I was in the Dominican Republic one time, and I think that the Mets ended up signing this guy, William Lugo. And I was at a showcase. I remember I'd seen him, and there was another event maybe a year later where I saw, was at a showcase, and I looked at the roster and it said William Lugo, and it was listed as some guy who was up there, is like 6'4" or something like that, big, tall, strong kid. And I went to the guy running the showcase and I said, I think there's a mistake on the roster. It's not William Lugo. I've seen him. He's like, no, that's him. I said, no, like William Lugo. I saw William Lugo like a year ago. He's like this squatty, like 6-foot compact body guy. And he's like, no, that's him. He just like grew 4 inches. So yeah, we don't talk about that with college players growing like 3 or 4 inches, you know, over the course of a year. But you do see that. Maybe that's an extreme case, obviously. Or like with him, O'Neal Cruz too, right? Like probably the Dodgers agreed to sign him. He was 6'1". By the time he signed, he's 6'4". And then now he's 6'7" or 6'8" or whatever he is. So, yeah, guys just physically can change a lot, including height wise, which doesn't really happen. We're talking about pro guys or college guys. And that size difference or just strength difference in a lot of cases can make a significant impact on players' tools, on player skill sets. You get more bat speed, you get more arm strength, guys get stronger, they start running faster too from one summer to the next. or even from, you know, from this summer for the 27s, some guys are going to come out next spring and be showing different tool sets. Their tools are going to have taken a jump forward, especially the power. I think that's the big one where we see guys take a jump forward, start driving the ball with more impact. But yeah, I like having that. It's, you know, just past, I think my 19th anniversary working at Baseball America. So I do like having that global perspective of, you know, what the top 15, 16, 17, 18 year old players all around the world look like, not just in the States, but in Latin America too. And obviously just having so many years of being able to pick the brains of so many scouts who've been doing this longer than I have over the years.
So, but with that, does that mean that when you're watching, you know, kind of asking for the audience, like, are there certain attributes, are there certain things you're looking for kind of more than others? Because you kind of know, like, again, when we're like, I'm talking about a college player, right? And you see someone who, you know, has good bat ball skills, a decent swing, but they really just don't have the ability to drive the ball even with a metal bat. You're generally going to be like, okay, if you can't do that at 21, the chances are that at 24, you're going to have playable powers, probably pretty slim. When you're looking at a 14, 15, even 16 year old, I have to imagine that becomes much less of the attribute. That's like an attribute that sometimes stands out, but it just may be that that player got to it earlier, I would imagine, than some others who have other better, you know, better skills, you know, better bat the ball skills, all that. And they're just waiting for that maturity to kick in to get the power, to get the bat speed that they're going to eventually need. Like, how do you kind of drill down on what's important when you're talking about a high school, you know, sophomore, high school age, sophomore, junior versus when you're talking about, again, older players?
Yeah, a lot of times the players at a really young age who will jump out or who will get a lot of attention early on are the early physical mature players, right? And they're just bigger, stronger. They're often older for their class too. So they're able to beat up on, you know, their peers in the competition that they're facing at that level. But if they don't have a swing, or they just don't have other traits that are going to continue to translate well, they're just beating up on other players their age or maybe even younger than their age if they're old for the class, but don't have skill sets and mechanics that are going to translate at higher levels, that's always a red flag for me. Whereas guys who maybe just, you know, they have good instincts for the game. I mean, you do still like to see, you know, especially by the time you get to be like 15, 16 years old, especially 16, that's when you start to see like real major league tool sets at that level. But, you know, not maybe necessarily power, but speed, arm strength, that kind of stuff. But you see guys who do things mechanically the way that they should look. The instincts are there. The bat to ball skills are there. They recognize pitches. They have a good plan at the plate. Once they start to layer on more strength, get bigger and stronger, yeah, then the power is going to come, especially if they have more physical projection in their frame, right? If a guy's already, you know, 6 foot, 200 pounds, already real strong, well, okay, not as much physical upside as a guy who's, you know, 6 foot, 275 pounds. Okay, well, once he fills out, and gets into his physical prime, or even just a few years later, like, okay, you know, there's, you know, whether it's a pitcher, more velocity is going to be coming, or there's going to be more bat speed, more power, more arm strength, better tools are coming. So, and it doesn't even need to be a tall guy. Like, not that I ever saw this coming from Ozzie Albies, but I saw Ozzie Albies when he was probably 15, 16 years old at an MLB showcase. And he was, I mean, he's no taller than he is right now. He's not very big, and he probably weighed about 127 pounds. But he was, you know, really athletic, quick twitch guy, could put the bat to the ball. And now he's, you know, putting up a, you know, 30 plus home run season under his belt. So those are the guys who have, you know, do things mechanically the way you want them to look and have those contact skills, have a feel for the game. Those are the kind of guys that I'm looking to bet on.
So along those lines, when you look at this 2027 high school class, next year's high school class, you've seen a lot of these classes now. How do you think that this one stacks up, you know, big picture first? Does seem like a lot of shortstops at the top.
Yeah, and I think there's one great shortstop at the top in Dylan Seward, switch hitting shortstop from Southern California, who's we have him right now as the number one overall prospect in our draft rankings, college or high school. And I think the last, going back to 2023, the only high school player who we had ranked number one at this time who was not the first high school player drafted was Ethan Holiday. And he, I think, was the second high school player drafted and got the biggest bonus. So, you know, got Max Clark, Connor Griffin, then it was Ethan Holiday, Grady Emerson last year. Dylan Seward, I think, is in pretty good company there. And I think if you put him in the draft even this year, I'd probably still take Grady Emerson ahead, but I'd have to think hard.
It's a good argument.
Yeah. Beyond him, yeah, you're right. There are a lot of good shortstops in this class. You got guys like Lubin Rincon, really smooth in everything he does, left-handed hitting shortstop from Texas. Guys like Leo Knockley, Carter Hadnott, Malachi Butler, Max Hemingway, Graham Houston. There's a lot of good shortstops, but I also think overall, there's like good players who are in that top 25, 30, 40, maybe 50 group. But overall, I think the class is a little bit down from what we would normally see at this point, like probably like a 40, 45 on the 2080 scale. Yeah. If you're grading just from the high school side of the draft at this point right now.
Okay. I want to get into Dylan Seward in more in depth. I'm also fortunate. That's one of the guys that I really got a chance to bear down on as well. And we'll do that right after this quick break.
This is that time of year, AJ. It is baseball's time to shine. And it is SeatGeek's time to shine with MLB tickets and finding the best pricing, seating, and games that are even sold out available on SeatGeek.
Absolutely. If you want to go to the biggest matchups coming up, we have Yankees Cubs coming up. There's Yankees Red Sox. It means stuff again. There's some big moments that are coming up here. And as the pennant chases really heat up, go to SeatGeek. You can find those green tickets with the best deals and get yourself out to an MLB game.
Yeah. And they're straightforward with you. They will actually put a red dot next to a ticket that they don't feel is your best look. Green dot means very good code for you. It's Territory 10, 10% off your next set of MLB tickets at SeatGeek. That's 10% off MLB tickets when you use the promo code Territory10. Make sure you click the link in the description to download the app and have the code automatically added to your account so you can use it later.
And we're back. So, Ben, we talked about Seward a little bit, but let's kind of drill down on him a little bit. Watching him, like, one thing that stands out first off is not that he's lacks physicality, but this is not, you know, we've had some of these kind of like top, the Connor Griffins of the world, right? We've had these shortstops who Bobby Witt Jr. kind of fits in this category going further back, but these sorts shortstops who kind of are these physical, just the physicality of them is kind of like stands out and like leaps out to you when you're watching them. That's not Dylan Seward. Like Dylan Seward's athleticism to me, you know, and you've seen him a lot more than I have, like it really jumps out more for kind of like what you see, the burst, the quick twitch, but also kind of like the overall game to me is kind of what makes him really jump out in comparison to his peers. Like, what is it about him to you that kind of makes him, like you said, the clear number one of this group?
He has a lot of strengths, and if you're trying to nitpick holes in his game, it's hard to find many of them. It's just a great combination of tools, the explosiveness that you're talking about, and then all the actions move the right way. The instincts are all there. You watch him at the plate, switch hitter, really high contact guy, has a very mature approach at the plate. The swing works really well from both sides. It's compact. It's smooth. The barrel stays through the zone for a long time. And then, like you said, he's not like Connor Griffin, where you're like, oh, this is like a freak show physical specimen, but he's, you know, about 6 foot, lean kid, but has a lot of bat speed, and the ball just flies off his bat. Like, I don't it's not like, oh, is he this gonna, you know, be like a 10 to 15 home run guy and, you know, occasionally juice, you know, a ball out to the pole side, something like that. Like, no, he definitely has power in there because there is a lot of bat speed just because of the power in there because of the bat speed that he's able to generate, and then just how frequently he is on the barrel that helps it play up. And then, oh yeah, like we haven't even gotten to his best tool yet, which is that he's an 80 runner. He's got great range, great instincts defensively at shortstop. The hands, the feet work well. He has a strong arm. Like, I don't know. I don't know what I'm not supposed to like about Dylan Seward.
The guy that I've been kind of sitting there, and again, you know, everyone always asks what's your comp, and we try to stay away from it, but I do try to figure out, like, okay, because one of the things you are looking at when you see a guy like this, you're trying, okay, so who is the player who's looked like this, who's ended up being like an impactful big leaguer, right? Because there are guys where you're like, you realize, like, okay, this is really a unicorn. Like Ellie De La Cruz, we talked about, you know, like that's a unicorn because there just hasn't been someone who that size at shortstop really kind of in like big league history. Seward, the one I kind of came to, I first started with thinking like he gave me a little bit of memory of a young Trey Turner. Cause again, you're talking about that 80 run, you know, that speed being so the athleticism, but that's not perfect. You know, he's a switch hitter, I'm going to run this one by you. Like, I think cold, I don't think I've run this by you before, but I kind of like a Jose Reyes type in some ways. Like, and again, I know that's going really far back for some people, but like when Jose Reyes was coming up, this like 6 foot, 170, 180, 185 pound switch hitting 80 runner, like impactful on the base paths guy, but also had the ability to hit for, you know, it wasn't just like a slap hit or anything as well. That was kind of something that Seward evoked a little bit to me. But the other thing with Seward that really stood out is patient too, right? Like really knows the zone. Like, I feel like I watched three at-bats of his, or three plate appearances, I should say, where it was like, it's 3-1 and he hasn't dropped, you know, pulled the bat off his shoulder yet because he hasn't seen a pitch worth swinging at yet.
Yeah, that's the thing. He's a tool shed, but then he's also just one of the more advanced instincts, smartest players out there, the internal clock in the field, the approach at the plate. I could see Jose Reyes, the guy right now who's coming up as a prospect. I mean, they're probably the same age, but like the guy who reminds me of him somewhat is Joswar Gonzalez with the Giants. I mean, just really quick twitch, athletic, explosive, switch hitting shortstop who's ranked extremely high right now on our top 100 prospects. And Joswar as an amateur, and obviously when he was an amateur, he was, you know, 16 years old, so even younger than Seward is right now. But I think there were more questions about, okay, how is this all going to translate in the game? Now he's, I think, clearly answered that. Yeah, extremely, extremely well, and is another really high, especially high in-zone contact guy with bat speed too, probably a similar build. I think those two guys are pretty similar players. And I probably, even though the, you know, we have more professional data right now on Joswar Gonzalez, I'd probably take Dylan Seward a tick ahead of him right now.
I can see it. Again, this is a guy we are kind of flagging as, this is not, oh, there, someone has to be number one in the class. This is a guy who's number one in the class. And you're like, and in many years, he would be number one in the high school class. Like, if you just kind of look at it year after year. The other part of this is that you've kind of, again, you've seen him for a couple, you know, for a while now. There, this is not something where often we get, I feel like there's the tools and you're like, but I wish I saw them translate a little bit more often. He's the guy who's kind of doing it also, right? Like it's something where you see this 80, you know, this 80 grade speed, you see the switch hitting, you see the bat speed, but you also don't see him. He's not really a much of a ups and downs, and kind of there's a kind of a steadiness to what you kind of get out of him week after week, month after month, isn't there?
Yeah, I would say, like, if you think about maybe like Grady Emerson last year or this past draft, I should say, I think Grady Emerson is a better pure hitter than Dylan Seward is. I'd probably say that about anybody compared to Grady Emerson. So just trying to like compare and
that contrast. That was Grady's tool.
Right. The two of them. But otherwise, yeah, I mean, Dylan Seward, he's just got a great offensive track record. And then you combine that with where he plays in the field, how he plays so well defensively at shortstop, and all the tools, all the explosiveness. Like, I just can't imagine. I can't imagine him not going and just even being conservative, the top 10 overall picks next year. And I can't see how, I can't, like, there's always different kinds of scouts, right, in terms of how much they weigh, just like the raw tools versus, you know, the more gamer type guys who maybe have a little bit more polish but are lighter on tools. I don't know, like, the type of scout that is not going to be really enamored with Dylan Seward.
So the thing that this class doesn't seem to have, the class coming up, is when you get to the arms, how worrisome is this high school pitching group? It just doesn't feel like it has a whole, there are some guys, but it doesn't have kind of that depth of especially top end guys at this point, does it? Or am I misevaluating it?
I think there are, so there are good arms. I think we're probably, well, certainly I am more conservative with high school pitching, especially this far out from the draft, maybe relative to other people would be. How many first round arms did we have this year, right? We had Gio Rojas, we had Coleman Borthwick, which is like the Padres. I don't know. Okay, fine. They're just like operating differently than most other clubs, I would say. And we have other guys who got paid comparably, right? Like Jensen Hirschhorn this year with the Braves. And there's some other guys who still got good money.
Bolaman, there are other guys who got paid, but
Brody Bamilla, even with two UCL surgeries. So credit to him. But yeah, I think, look, the teams in general are saying we're more conservative with these guys than certainly they used to be. And there's just so much risk, I think, with 16, 17-year-old pitching. There are good arms in this class, but there are certainly are a lot of, like, there's just so much that can go sideways with them. Some of the top guys this year, guy like Samir Muhammad from Florida, obviously Stryker Pence, an extremely famous guy, just being the nephew of Hunter Pence, and then also throwing 101 miles an hour when he was 16 years old. George Ferguson has been into the upper 90s, right-hander from Texas, 6'4", kind of an unorthodox delivery, but also throws a ton of strikes. So those guys definitely jump out. There's some other arms this year, and there's going to be guys who we're not going to even have ranked in our top 200 draft prospects come the time of the draft, who are going to be throwing like 98, 99 miles an hour. So there's no shortage of velocity throughout the high school circuit.
So that's a kind of a, again, 50,000 foot view, but of this 27 class. But Ben's already also been hard at work on the 28s as well. We'll get into that right after this quick break. So Ben, so that's the 27th, kind of an idea of it. And again, we have this guy at the top who we're like, okay, that is the clear number one in that group. What about the 28s? Is there someone, we're further away, we're not holding you to like, that's going to be the number one guy come draft day 2+ years from now. But is there someone who's kind of standing out at the top of the group, or is it more kind of a group of guys at the top?
That's one of the big differences from 28 versus 27, or even really most other years that we've had recently, is there is not that one clear-cut number one guy where we put him at the top the way we have with Dylan Seward in 27, or the way we did with Grady Emerson from the time he was probably 15 years old in 2026, or Connor Griffin when as soon as he reclassed to 24, he was our number one high school player the whole way through. For the 2024 class, we don't have that. I mean, we might end up having 7 or 8 different high school players at the top of our high school rankings for 2028 by the time the 28 draft rolls around. there is just not that one marquee guy where it's like, oh, okay, this is like the obvious smack you in the face guy who's just like ahead of everybody else in this class. I do think overall it's stronger than 2027 was at this time last year, and the way that the 27 class has developed, feel even stronger about saying that. But there's not an obvious number one. But in our last update, we do have Flip Waters, an outfielder from Michigan, number one, and he moved up to number one in this last update because he does check a lot of the boxes that you're looking for you know, for a potential first round pick. When you're seeing a guy, obviously still 2 years out from the draft, but at 16 years old, it's physicality, athleticism, really good left-handed swing.
I like the swing.
Yeah, he's the younger brother of Beano Waters, too. Just had a couple really good years at Notre Dame, transferring to LSU, probably end up being a top 2-3 round pick in the draft next year. Probably LSU and Jay Johnson not too disappointed to have a built-in relationship there. But we'll see if
see your brother play.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see if he ends up getting to college, because there's a lot of tools that that teams are going to be drawn to. I mean, he runs extremely well too, especially for a guy who's as big as he is. Like, it's legit plus speed right now, even though he's built more along the lines of a corner outfielder, kind of like a Walker Jenkins, that kind of like physicality, but he even like runs better than Walker. And he had a great summer, really good summer, hitting ability, power, strike zone judgment. So a lot of things to be really excited about with Flip Waters.
So the other thing that does stand out, like you said, there's more kind of guys in this, and there's some like you got Derek Vasquez in that mix too. There's some present physicality. I say that especially when you're talking about how young these guys are, right? Like you said, like we're talking about Waters, Flip Waters is 6'2", 190 right now, and he's still got two years of high school to go. Vasquez is 6'2", 185 right now, and he's got 2 years of high school to go. Like, there's physicality in this group, and it does seem like that, again, makes sense that the top is going to be a lot of guys who are up the middle profiles, but it does seem like a nice mix of up the middle profiles. You've got some, you know, you've got a Utah bat, you know, near the top of the class in Jacob Welch, which is not a normal thing we get to say. But when you look at this, that class as a whole, like, as you said, there probably may be some jockeying back and forth. What is the difference? Like, again, just like for big picture, for people trying to understand this, you just laid out, like, we just hit the point now, like something, again, we talk about all the things that have gone crazy with the NCAA and college baseball and all that. One thing that has become more rational, I would say, in the last few years, if you go check out our 2028 high school rankings, what you'll notice there is committed colon uncommitted in, you know, most all instances, because we really just hit the point where the official recruiting period for these players has just begun, right? Like, that was August 1st, right? Like, you can't contact these players officially. You could, you know, I'm not saying you can't nod your head as you walk by them or something, but you can't, you know, formally, you know, like, recruit players until they hit their junior year now.
Yeah, I mean, it used to be that college coaches were recruiting and offering players when they were like 13 years old in some cases, which is like, you're a college coach, like, talking to a 13-year-old, and a 13-year-old is going to know what he wants out of college in 5 years when he's 18, or like really 6 to 9 years down there. Like, no, it was ridiculous. So it's a much better system now, I think, that everything is just slowed down. So,
and no one disagrees. Like, the funny thing about this is it's sad it was the other way, because you don't find a college coach who's like, you know, what I really miss when I was a recruiting coordinator, spending a whole lot of time at like 13U type events because I didn't want to be late on a guy. Like, that's not a good system. Now it's much more, it makes a whole lot more sense to say, yes, you're going into your junior year, start thinking about college. That makes sense. By the way, the coaches there, there's also a better chance that the coaches will still be at the institution as opposed to, oh, I'm a rising ninth grader and I'm committing to a school for, you know, that could be two coaches later at that point.
Yeah, it's I think it's much better for pretty much everybody involved, especially the players, just be able to slow everything down. So yeah, now is like when the recruiting period really heats up, right? This, especially over these next, let's say like 6 months for the very, very top high school players. And then I think people get, there's a, this like misunderstanding this belief that like, oh, like why are we even bothering, you know, like why is my team, you know, my college team bothering to recruit this guy who's ranked in the top 20 or 50, like he's not going to get to school. No, like, okay, like there's certain guys where it's like, okay, a Dylan Seward, where you see a guy who's that good, or a Grady Emerson. Okay, fine. Like that's, those guys are the exceptions. There's a lot that can change in the 2 years leading up to the draft. Like we've looked at the data on this, even guys who are ranked in the top 50 still have a pretty good chance of getting to college, because there's just a lot that can change. Guys' signability is you don't know what it's going to be when they're 16 years old. Some guys, look, there's a lot of guys who are going to play college baseball next year who easily could have gotten drafted and got offers for $1 million, $1.5 million more, who just said, no, I want more money than that. Otherwise, I'm going to play college baseball. And then you do still get guys like Derek Curiel, or now Logan Schmidt, or Tyler Bell, or Chris Lavonis, who
William Schmidt. Said, I mean,
yeah, who still go to college. So there's a lot that can change until we get to like the actual draft date, or like very close to approaching the draft date. And then you see, okay, well, these guys are ranked top 40, 50 in a class, like, okay, then you have pretty little chance of getting those guys. But at this point, it makes all the sense in the world, if you're one of the top programs in the country, to be going after these top high school players.
Especially when you throw in the fact that, again, when you now, the equation's also very much changed what it used to be, because it used to be back in the old days that we both were there for, that you were talking about, okay, that break-even point could be $750,000 or $1 million, because if your choices are $1 million or $0, for many players, like that's a hard, hard number to look away from, even if you want to go to school. But if that number is $750,000 or $1 million versus, okay, I'm going to make less at college, but I'm going to make real, potentially game-changing money while I play college baseball, and then have the opportunity also to turn $750,000 into $3 million or more in the draft a couple of years down the road. That's a very different equation to me than it used to be, where it was like, you never know, especially if you're a pitcher, get hurt, whatever, this could be your one shot at life-changing money. Now that equation feels like it's a lot different than it used to be. Again, you do the recruiting, a lot of the recruiting stuff for us also. How much do you feel like that's changed kind of the dynamic of this?
I think it has some impact, like the NIL that especially an incoming college freshman is going to get is not like substantial. And they might say like, oh, like, you know, we have X amount of money for you now, and then we'll do Y in year two. Like that's, you can't count on any future promises of what money the school says they're going to give you. Cause if you come in and you stink as a freshman, they're going to be like, we don't have that money. But I do think, yeah,
something happened.
Yeah. MLB. Look, I mean, MLB stacks the deck against the high school player in the draft. Like if you look at the top 50 bonuses, it was like a little bit more than half went to high school players. The top 100 bonuses, it was a little less than half, like 47, something like that, went to high school players. And then, like, there just aren't that many high school players, period, who end up signing. It's about, like, 100 or so high school players every year who sign. And it is not the top 100 high school players in the country who are signing. It's like the top, a lot of the top 60 or so players will sign. And then it's a lot of guys who say, yeah, I'll take $200,000. I'll take $350,000 to sign later on in the draft. Sure. I just want to start and play professional baseball, and I have no interest in continuing going to school. And so, which, you know, which is fine, but there's just, there are a lot of really good high school players who are still going to college. And especially at this point in the process, we're talking, whether we're talking about 27s who are, you know, at this point are mostly all committed at this point, or 28s who are, like you said, almost 99% still uncommitted, except for the guys who jumped on those August 1st offers and said, yes, I'll go there. But there's so much that can change with those guys.
By the way, if you, that scenario, the $150,000, $250,000, $350,000 guy, Ben's written a lot about that. Like, I'm pointing out, like, okay, so mom, dad, the Brewers are on the phone. There seems to be a call coming. It's like the Brewers, a couple other teams that do this, but there are teams that do this very well now, you know, at like that kind of that 11th round on high school player who a lot of times is not as well noticed, but, you know, again, we've seen a number of those guys kind of blossom.
Turns into Josh Adamczewski.
Mm-hmm. Turns into Josh Adamczewski, exactly. But, okay, so when it comes to, as you said, understandably very conservative about pitchers, especially at this age, like, there's more position players at the top of that 28 class. Kind of a big picture question on that. Because we just saw, you were just at an event, we saw another, you know, 16-year-old throw 100.
Annual tradition now.
Yeah. Annual tradition. Is that something, again, I'm not saying, like, we're not having a philosophical debate about velocity. I'm just asking from a evaluative standpoint. I know that that catches a lot of attention. Is that a marker to you of future success? Or is that something where it's like, okay, yes, you threw it, you know, someone threw 100 at 16. That doesn't necessarily mean, I think that there's kind of this expectation out there now that, well, that means that guy's the top pitching prospect in the class, right? It's like, no, not necessarily. We've seen guys who throw 100, you know, most every year now coming out of high school. It's got to be more than that. It's not, that's where I think that the, I think that's where the industry's gotten smarter in the last decade. Like, it used to be that if you threw 100, and it could be like, what other attributes does this player have? He threw 100, you know, like, and that could get you to the very top of a class. It doesn't feel like that's the case anymore, is it?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of both, right? So, I mean, yeah, that in the high school pitcher who's throwing 100, I mean, Colin Scott, who also is a third baseman with like huge raw power, probably power over hit type guy. I mean, maybe it's neither, because maybe he just is a pitcher. But he's also just turned 16, I think, a few months ago. So it's pretty impressive just to watch him throw like he did at the area code games. He's throwing like an 88 to 90 mile an hour slider too, which I guess you can do when you throw 100 miles an hour. And there's, I mean, it's just like, he's a big, strong kid, but also looks like there's still some more physical upside left, just like a really explosive, powerful, rotational force with him. But overall, yeah, you're right. I mean, it's great to throw 100 miles an hour at a young age, or at any age, and I think it is indicative of a player's promise. But also, yeah, like, you need to see more than that, right? Like, you want to see a guy who has the stuff to start, right? You want to see strikes. You want to see feel for secondary stuff. You want to see a delivery. And, you know, that can be some subjectivity to evaluating a delivery. But you want to see something that's going to be conducive, especially to being able to repeat it, to being able to throw strikes with it, not just like herky jerky all over the place. Okay, like, that's going to be difficult for a guy to have the body control to throw strikes. So, I mean, I think you look at some of the other pitchers who are at the top of the class this year for 2028, guys like left-hander Grayson Bell out of Pennsylvania, right-hander Cullen Poplin from Florida, another right-hander Gavin Chaker from Connecticut. Like, these guys all, for the most part, have like really good deliveries, feel for spinning, and in some cases multiple breaking balls, some changeups in some of those cases. I mean, that's usually pitch that's a little bit further behind at this age, because I mean, especially if you're throwing 100 miles an hour, like you don't really need much of a changeup. But so that pitch often develops later for pitchers. But yeah, I mean, you're looking for guys who are generally at the top of the class. It's not just raw velocity that you're looking at. It's all the other checkpoints that you're looking for in evaluating a pitcher and what it's going to look like down the road. Because, yeah, I mean, look, whether it's 100 miles an hour, 97, 98, like there's so many guys out there who throw upper 90s. And then like there's just a limit to how much harder you're ultimately going to throw. So it's nice to know that you have that big fastball in your pocket to be able to rely on. But I think scouts are, when they're projecting guys out and seeing who's going to be the most successful major league starters years down the road, they're looking for a whole bunch of other checkpoints for guys who are at the very, very top of a list at this point.
So that is a overview look at the 2027 and 2028 high school classes. Ben, before we wrap this up, anything we didn't cover that really stands out about either of these classes that we should absolutely touch on?
Yeah, like you said, I mean, there's a lot of good shortstops too in this this 2028 class that we were just talking about.
It does seem like Knockley is having a very good couple of weeks. Leo Knockley.
Yeah, 27. Yeah, I mean, Leo Knockley, who's 5 foot, not a lot, but eight. Man, yeah, I mean, I don't care how big he is, because hits the ball surprisingly hard. Like shockingly hard for his side, and it's a size, and it's a really good left-handed swing to really good instincts for the game, good actions at shortstop, internal clock, really good hands, quick release. Like, I don't know. He's probably just as big as maybe like Jet Williams or Slade Caldwell are. And I think Leo Knockley's a better guy than, or a better player at the time than either of those guys. And those guys were both first round picks. So I would not be surprised to see Leo Knockley ultimately end up going in the first round, which is where we have him right now. And then 2028, yeah, you mentioned guys like Derek Vasquez, Jake Welch, Theo Swafford, just really good. All these guys, like, you know, we're looking to get ideally those premium position guys toward the top of the list. And those guys certainly check that box, and they all those guys just have really good instincts for the game, really good bat to ball skills, good swings, always putting together quality at bats. Just saw, I wasn't at East Coast Pro, Carlos was there, but I know Derek Vasquez homered there, and he's a 28 going up against a bunch of 2027s. He was one of Carlos's big standouts there. And then Jake Welch and Theo Swafford both looked great at area codes, and they both look great all summer. Two guys who were, you know, maybe like 5'11", 6 foot, not the most physical guys, but really advanced both defensively, offensively. They have the bat to ball skills that especially teams have just shown that they're looking for right now. And Welch in particular, for a guy who's not all that physical either, hits the ball extremely hard for a guy his size. He's a guy who's not just like a scrappy gamer type. Like he is, but there's also some tools there. He can run, he can throw up to the mid 90s on the mound. Not that I think his future is going to ever be on the mound beyond high school, but those are all guys who I think have a chance to be early round picks coming out of high school in a couple of years.
It's going to be fun to watch it. And again, you know, when you say like when Ben highlights a hitter who's not particularly tall, I always flash back to, you know, when high school, Kevin McGonigal, there was always questions, you know, hey, he's not that big. Ben was very much like, nope, Kevin McGonigal, just trust it, trust the bat, and we see what it's turned into. So, that is our look at the 27, 28 prep classes and kind of where they are right now with Ben Badler. And so obviously check out, we have rankings for basically for all of this over at baseballamerica.com. We also have kind of coverage of the recruiting aspects of it that Ben touched about as well. You can see where these guys are committed. You know, we also have kind of rankings as far as our 20 wrapping up the 26 recruiting class as well, if you're interested in that. For Ben, I'm JJ. So long, everybody.